Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Back to the show. Lynette here, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon. We have Dr. Samira Umat, too, taking a lot of different calls on a lot of different topics today, and this continues.
And then during the break, we were coming up with some of our family folk recipes for infections and colds.
That's right.
I was sharing that my grandma, my grandpa, was an interesting character. He was a Southern Baptist minister, a philanderer, and a moonshiner.
Okay.
I didn't know those three could exist together, but I guess they did.
Well, I think
as a PK myself, I can say, yes, they do.
Yes. Okay. And he had to keep the philandering bit just a bit mild, you know. But I do recall that when I guess Grandma knew about his other lady, and when he was in his mid-80s, his other lady died. And he had a heart-to-heart with my grandma and explained that he was going to be faithful from now on, that at 88 years old, he just didn't have the energy to find another woman.
I'm wondering if grandma had something to do with that disappearance of
other... You never know. but he made great moonshine. He referred to it as sand, and it was served. Yeah, and for some reason, his clear sand was served in mason jars. People would come by the barn and pick up gunny sack with mason jars and distribute it to their friends. But when we caught a cold, that's what triggered all this. I remember my grandmother. If I was down visiting and I caught a cold, I got honey and moonshine.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. She put honey and a couple of tablespoons of moonshine and honey down my gullet. The honey was sweet. The moonshine burned.
Oh, boy.
But the theory was the moonshine was going to kill all those darn viruses down there.
Oh, boy.
Darn viruses.
Okay. Okay. And how did it work? How's that going?
I don't know, but you know,
you're still alive.
You get dosed often enough, you don't give a damn about the cold anymore.
You need us out of Grandma's way over there, passed out in the bed, sleeping it off.
You got it. So,
okay.
Yeah, a little honey and moonshine fixed whatever ailed you.
There you go. All right.
That's
just what the doctor ordered. Okay. Leading Edge Medicine here. And that is going back a few decades. And now we know where the marketing comes from. Yeah, the marketing genius. We have Jeff from Edmonds on the line. Hi there, Jeff.
Hello, Jeff.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Now that we've dumped all the family dirty laundry out in the open.
I'd be willing to try that. Yeah. I'd be willing to try that medication.
That's
I've
right.
I've got some questions about diabetes.
And, okay.
Lately, my glucose numbers in the morning have been like in the 60s and 50s.
Wow.
I think
fairly low.
That's kind of low, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, most people start getting symptoms, lightheaded and shaky and stuff, if it gets down around 60 or below.
Yeah.
So you want to be a little cautious.
Is there anything I can do, like, prior to going to bed to keep those numbers up a bit?
A little protein load.
Yeah, I mean, what medications are you taking? Yeah. Maybe you need to adjust the dose.
Yeah, tell us a bit about your medicines. You know, are you insulin dependent? Are you taking metformin? What are you doing?
Actually, I'm not taking any medication at all for diabetes.
Okay, well, that's good news. Well, that just that doesn't worry me too much. What is your peak sugar? What is your sugar at its, you know, after a meal or afternoon, evening?
Well, yeah, yesterday it was like 180 or so.
Okay.
After I had breakfast. And I know that's slightly high.
It is.
Right?
It is, but you know, a fasting sugar, the cutoff for formal diabetes is a fasting sugar in the morning without eating over 126. Okay.
Whoa.
And so actually, how long after eating did you check your sugar?
About an hour.
Okay. See, you normally peak about 30 to 40 minutes after you eat. That's when your blood sugar gets its highest. And so your peak is in the 180s, and your trough in the morning is in the 60s. So if you're a diabetic, it's a very, very mild diabetes. I'd be interested and have somebody doing a glucose tolerance test on you. Have you come in fasting? Yeah, they draw your fasting sugar. They give you a known amount of sugar, usually 65 grams of sugar in a drink. So you drink down this drink, gives you a known quantity of sugar. Then they check your blood sugar at 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours. And they draw your curve and see how high you go and how fast you come down. And you may not be a real diabetic anymore. You may have it under control.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. It would. So, you know.
What's your hemoglobin A1C? Do you know?
Last tested, it was 6.65 or 6.4, I think it was.
Okay. See, 6.5 and above is the definition of diabetes.
Right.
Now, 5.7 and above is defined as pre-diabetes. So, a A1C in the low sixes tells me that while you're not a formal diabetic, you're close. Mm-hmm. You're close.
I'm managing it.
Mm-hmm. Very well. Yes.
I exercise quite a bit every week, like 5 or 6 hours a week.
Good for you.
So,
See, and all that muscle burns sugar even while you sleep. Muscle is a very energy-intensive tissue. And the more muscle you got, the more sugar it'll burn even when you're sleeping.
Ooh.
You don't don't just burn it with exercise. Muscle is an important tissue. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But I heard that people can control their diabetes with exercise, eating right.
And weight loss, many people can.
Yeah, and that weight loss, that's another thing of unexplained weight loss for the past couple of years.
Well, if you're exercising 3 to 5 hours a week, I think we just explained it. But
so actually there's pretty good news, actually.
Yes, I don't hear anything in your story that worries me too much. So, you know, all I'm going to say is keep it up. I would be interested in getting a glucose tolerance test. But, okay.
Yeah, so I think things are pretty copacetic now.
I think so. You
cowabunga.
That's right. Cowabunga, dude.
Yeah, I know.
No, that's awesome. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. See, I was just down in California at Monterey watching the surf come in. So I guess maybe that's triggering my adolescent cerebral vocabulary.
Okay. Hey, you didn't tell us about the trip. How was it? How was that Halloween place?
It's a very interesting place. Great story behind it, really.
You went to a Halloween place?
I went to the Winchester Mansion.
Oh.
Yeah. And we got people waiting, so I can't spend too much time on this, but let me give you a real quick thumb.
We'll let you get a couple of minutes in before we take our break, and then we'll get back to our calls.
yeah, she was married. Mrs. Winchester was married to the psych on the person that owned the Winchester Firearms Company. And she had a lot of deaths in her family right close together. Her husband died, her father died, her sister died, all sorts of people in the family died. So she went to a spiritualist. Spiritualism was very, very big in Victorian America and in England, all over Europe. People held seances as a social activity. And she went to a spiritualist who told her that all of the spirits that had been killed by her husband's gun were taking their revenge on her family. And that the way to save herself was to surround herself with construction activity, that the constant sawing and pounding of hammers and saws would scare the spirits. And she needed to build a complex of rooms to both confuse them and allow them to get lost so they couldn't find her in her home. And so she lived in New England. She bought a 8-room farmhouse in San Jose, California, sight unseen. But you see, she inherited from her husband's death $20 million in the 1870s.
Wow. Oh my!
When the average daily wage was 50 cents a day for a worker.
Oh boy!
And she got $20 million. Wow. So she was a billionaire in her day.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So she bought this house and she had them start building it. And she moved from New England to San Jose. Hmm. And this house, we don't know how many rooms it originally had. It built and built and built, and the construction never stopped. But it was 7 stories tall. Mm. And massive on the ground floor. It took up much of the 14 acres of the land. And but in the 1906 earthquake, the upper stories started leaning and they had to rip them down. So now it's only 3 stories tall instead of 7.
Wow.
But it still has 160 rooms.
Oh my. Because she just kept building and building and building.
Until the day of her death, she was building. And she had 2 seance rooms so she could talk to her hubby or her friends. Dearly departed. And so she had 1 big seance room for the social seances where all of her friends would come. And then she had 1 seance room that only she could go in to talk to hubby.
Wow.
Kind of an interesting.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And there were like doors to nowhere sometimes.
Yeah, doors
right?
that went nowhere, stairwells that ended at a blank wall.
Oh. Just to keep it going.
Just to keep it building.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Put that on our list there, right, Dr.
No,
Emma?
Not me. No. Not me. No, no,
no. No. No.
Well, and they tell stories about the spirits that do wander those halls.
Really?
Wow.
Yes.
Still.
And the
keep
guides.
Bumping into the walls.
Almost all of the guides have personal stories of bumping into spirits there.
Wow.
Wow.
So.
Okay. Oof.
All right, we will be back with more calls, and we'd love to talk with you too at 206-421-5757, Leading Edge Medicine, returns after this.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Dashing through the snow in a one-horse
open sleigh.
All the fields we go, laughing.
They're so
all
romantic.
The
oh, welcome back.
When you're cold.
Yeah.
On those really, really cold winter snowy days, what you really want is cuddling up in front of the fireplace.
Oh, there we go. Give me a fireplace.
Get out of that snow.
Yeah.
Let somebody else put the horse away, and
me
and her will head for the fireplace.
There you go. Okay.
And the moonshine.
And the moonshine. And the sand. Oh, good morning.
No,
Leading
no,
Edge
no.
Medicine.
No moonshine if you want romance.
Okay.
Because Benjamin Franklin had something to say about that.
Oh.
He said, he has learned that wine inflames the desire but inhibits the capacity.
Ooh. I've seen pictures of Benjamin Franklin, and I'm thinking, I don't think of him as...
he was quite a little...
Flame or desire.
He was, he was quite a scoundrel in his youth.
Okay.
He really was. Yeah, he wrote
you do know your history, don't you?
Well, I read his autobiography.
Okay.
And no, Benjamin Franklin, first of all, he skipped out on his apprenticeship. He was apprenticed to a printer and was impatient and did not want to wait to finish his apprenticeship. Mm. So he ran away and went to Boston and set up his own print shop, unqualified and half prepared.
Okay.
And he fell into bad company. Yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's right. He was known to consort with ladies of ill repute.
No.
And in fact, lived with one of those ladies of ill repute.
Way back
for
then?
Some time.
Wow.
Prior to his marriage.
Mm. Right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Rather presidential tips and historical facts.
Well, and then, yes. But he got married, cleaned it
up. Okay.
Became quite affluent in the printing business. Did Poor Richard's Almanac, which was sold nationally. Of course, nationally was a lot smaller in those days.
Yeah, much smaller, yes.
But it made him wealthy. And he was a big booster of religion, though a little loose in its practical aspects in his personal life. But he bought, in those days, you bought a pew. You didn't just go and find a place to sit down at church. You bought a pew, and that belonged to you and your family.
And your family.
And he bought pews at every church and synagogue in Boston.
Wow.
So anywhere he went, he owned a pew in the church, and it made him a member of every church, which is great for business.
Yes.
And every synagogue. So it wasn't just Christian churches. He also did Jewish synagogues.
I've seen those. They're very like the North Church in Boston. Yeah.
And then when he was our ambassador to France, he managed to scandalize the French, which was hard to do.
Wow.
But he was prone. He had apartments, and he had a balcony right on one of the main streets, thoroughfares. And he was known to go out on his balcony naked and take air baths.
Air baths.
Air baths.
So glad our presidents don't do that today.
Well, he wasn't a president.
I mean,
he was the ambassador.
Ambassador
and
at the time.
Ambassadors do all kinds of weird things. But anyway, and he also got involved with his maid, who bore him a son while he was ambassador to France. When he came home to his wife, he left the maid behind, but took the son with him.
Mm.
In those days, it was a patriarchal society, and his son was his son, not hers.
Wow.
Okay. And his wife met him at the ship, to which he presented her with his son and said, "Here, wife, is my son. You shall raise him."
Wow.
Interesting character.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very interesting. I may do a little digging on that. Woo. All right. Oh, the phones are blinking. Let's see if they want to talk about Benjamin Franklin.
Any more of our founding fathers?
I do not think so.
George Washington slept here, but was he alone?
That's right. Okay. So we're back with Will from Renton.
Actually, I suspect Washington was. He was really straight-laced.
There you go. Okay. Okay, hello. Will there from Renton.
Hello, Will.
Are you learning a lot today, hello. Will?
Hello, Will.
Well,
yeah,
welcome.
I sure am. Well, 47 years ago,
our forefathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I have a question,
yes.
And it kind of ties in with one of your advertisements that I just heard. Now,
okay.
Through sports injuries
and
work injuries, I'm really thinking about doing some stem cell stuff.
Okay.
And I'd like to know if there's any more stuff I need to learn about it besides going in. Can I get your report on it? I've got a shoulder issue, a knee, and a hip.
Okay. Well, let me tell you a little bit about. I just saw a study on that, in fact, this morning
I
came to work.
Okay.
Yes, I get up at 5, and normally I go out on the trail for about 3 miles, but it was pouring rain, and I said, I'm not going to go run in the rain. So I sat down and pulled up some studies and read them. And I happened to come across one on stem cell therapy and knee replacements.
Okay.
And they found that the stem cell therapy in a large meta-analysis decreases the need for knee replacements dramatically. Mm. That they do work.
Decreases permanently or delays?
Well, the number and people that have had this stem cell therapies, you know, they're less likely. Now the study was only a few years long.
Okay.
So, you know, but for at least for
Go ahead. I suffer from slight tears, meniscus, labrum, and in the hip and in the shoulder. And I kind of want to do this and get before I get too old to do anything. Cause,
With the anterior cruciate ligament, there was a study published recently that said that surgical outcomes were not that good.
And, in fact, they were crummy.
Conservative was fine. Yeah.
But Dan Nelson will educate you on what he thinks it will and won't do for you. He turns people down. He, you know, if he doesn't think that he can help, he'll tell you that. You know, and if he thinks he might help, he'll give you the odds. You know, he knows what his success rate is with each procedure. I've had both my left hip and right shoulder stem cells from Dan. I broke my left hip glacier skiing 20 some years ago, and they put some screws in that were working their way out and causing me a lot of pain. And I had part of the head of the femur had died because this particular fracture I had cut off blood supply to part of the bone. So I had an irregularly shaped femur that would rub. Took the screws out, got the, I actually had 2 rounds of stem cell in the hip, and it is dramatically better. I go out and I run on that hip now. I climb stairs. I have no problems with it. I took a fall.
Yeah, I basically want to work and play.
I took a fall a few years ago and tore partial tears to 3 ligaments in my shoulder. And he let it calm down for a bit and then did a set of stem cell injections in. And that shoulder is totally healed. I knock out in the neighborhood of 300 push-ups on it each day now. And I have no pain at all.
Now, is there therapy involved?
Nope. My therapy was I took it easy till I could start to move the shoulder a little bit, kept it tight to my side for a while. But, you know, I gave the ligaments a month or so to stabilize before I went in, and Dan did the injections, and it healed perfectly.
Yeah, but, you know, you're more active. You use your body all the time.
I do.
Your physical activity and in the gym, on the on the trail.
Yeah.
But you're active, so you do use. Yes. You didn't, like, do nothing.
That's right. No, and that's the point. You know, for me, the physical therapist is usually trying to get you to use the joint and move it. And the problem with me is getting me to not use all my joints. But
okay, well, you guys, I really appreciate it, and I will give Dr. Nelson a ring. I'm trying to get my poop in a group and be able to afford this. And I've been working hard and taking it kind of easy, but that's all I need to know. And I appreciate it. So you guys enjoy your weekend.
Okay, you take care, my friend.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Good luck.
All right. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with more of your questions. Ben, we're going to talk with you, and John, too. And we want to tell you a little bit about longevity that sponsors the show in just a moment. Stay right there. This is Leading Edge Medicine.
Bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has been.
sweet song, isn't it?
Oh.
Jingle bell time, jingle bell time.
So
we're all just kind of sitting here swaying our chairs, eyes half closed. That's right.
Oh, such wonderful music, and we'll enjoy it along with you today. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon, Dr. Samira Umat. This is Leading Edge Medicine, and Ben from Seattle is on the line now. Hi there, Ben.
Hello, Ben.
Hello. Hello. Say, I've got a question about Ipamorelin.
Okay.
My primary concern is safety, that it's safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but secondarily, I hear that it makes you look younger and may extend your life, and is really good for you in terms of a lot of different things. Now, with respect to LabCorp, my IGF-1 is normal at 175,
that's
and
good.
I think the range is 150 to 250. I'm 64, and I'm wondering just really what your thoughts are about taking Ipamorelin. I was told that I can have levels up to 350 and that it's perfectly safe. So that's
higher than I want you to go by a long shot.
Yeah, you don't want to go there.
You want to talk about the Ipamorelin?
Well, I can. I mean, it's not an FDA-approved peptide, so we do not use it in our clinics.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen many peptides come and go. They fall out of favor quickly. Production stops. Availability goes away. Dosing is a problem. Getting it on time is a problem. Cost is a problem. And then you don't know whether it's safe to use or not.
That's right.
And so we don't know clinics that use them, but we haven't gone that route.
Legally, if a drug has been approved by the FDA for any use, doctors can write it off-label. Mm-hmm. So you can use it for other things. Ipamorelin has never been approved by the FDA for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is not just off-label, it is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm. It doesn't seem to be one that the feds are coming after aggressively, but I don't want my doctors in any kind of trouble, and I don't want my clinic in trouble, so we don't write it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That doesn't mean it doesn't raise growth hormone levels, but it means if your doctor decides to use it, he is putting himself in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. An alternative that we do use in our clinic is Sermorelin, which is approved by the FDA to stimulate the production of growth hormone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a growth hormone releasing hormone analog. And so the idea being that people would take it, young people that had growth hormone deficiencies would take it, it would trigger their pituitaries to kick out growth hormone, and they would make their own growth hormone and do just fine. It never got popular because growth hormone got cheaper than the Sermorelin. and why, you know, why use a step back when you can just use the real thing?
Right.
So it still has FDA approval, but nobody manufactures it as a prescription drug anymore. Now, it is manufactured as an off-label compounded drug. And so clinics can buy it. We use it because it's the only of the growth hormones secreting peptides that is approved by the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
What else to tell you about it?
I mean, the peptides definitely play a role, but given your levels, the question would be, what are you trying to achieve?
Yeah, because your levels are already very good.
Yeah.
You do not fall in a category where I would recommend Sermorelin to you. I mean, I don't know what your doctor's going to decide.
Right.
But I wouldn't.
And then remember, too high values also indicate risk for inflammation and cancer.
Yep.
So we're very careful about its use. There's so many other things you can do in functional medicine to help improve longevity and lifespan, or health span and lifespan. And we focus on those a lot.
That's right.
Okay. Well, that's really helpful. That the thing that I heard him say over and over again is that it's going to make you look much younger. It's going to slow your aging down. And that, of course, is appealing.
Of course it is. And for that, we have some very good things that tend to improve your muscle mass and make you stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier.
Well, you see,
hotter.
But the thing is here, so Jerry, you know, what I worry about is people are, I guess, misled, right?
Yes.
You think you put something in your body by an injection and all of a sudden it's going to make you look better and be stronger. It's not.
Nope.
You're going to have to work at it. So that's why I prefer the functional medicine approach where it's education first and you do the hard work. You will get the results.
Mm-hmm.
But we help by providing the tools that are missing. You give the body the tools that it needs to do the work. It'll do the work.
But it'll
get you the results you're looking for. But if your IGF level, if your IGF-1 level is as high as it is right now, it's not indicating that you're deficient in growth hormone.
No, not at all. The fact is, if you're in your 60s and you're at 175, you're much higher than the average person your age.
Yeah.
And that's because of exercise, I think.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Exercise and working muscle raises growth hormone levels. You know, there are several things people can do to raise their growth hormone levels without taking growth hormone.
Right.
And one is exercise.
Mm-hmm.
The other is get lean. Every pound of body fat cuts your growth hormone production lower.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is
intermittent fasting,
hunger. Mm-hmm. Hunger releases growth hormone factors. And the other one, of course, is
your personal favorite.
My
I
personal
always tell
favorite,
everybody.
which is sexual arousal and orgasm, which triggers a big burst of growth hormone. So those five things. So the prescription is eat lightly, get thin, exercise vigorously, and have a wonderful sex life.
Yes. Well, thank you very much.
All right.
You're welcome.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I hate when people mislead others, you know.
It's, I know.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, and I get worried where somebody's talking about a peptide that has no FDA approval,
mm-hmm.
and it sounds almost like they're selling
mm-hmm.
the patient on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that does cause me some concern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you got to work at it is all I'm going to tell you. It's hard work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And at Longevity, the doctors do care, and they're passionate about you and our patients. They don't want to make you do something or push something on you that you're not needing and don't want.
Yep.
And, you know, once you teach, I mean, we have wonderful patients, and once you teach them about what products can do for their body and how they can help get the best results for themselves, they're motivated to go out there and try. And for me, that is the best way. That way that you hold yourself accountable. Yes, everybody has good days and bad days, but then you understand what the consequences are and you accept those. So it's tough. It's hard work.
Well, it's worth it, especially if you want to be stronger,
faster,
yep.
leaner,
smarter, sexier,
and happier.
We want to get you into longevity, and that's why we are here each week. I want to tell you about what's going on at the clinics. Want to have you be a patient. We love when our patients call in on the show and need a little bit more clarification, or the doctors can direct them on what to do. And if you're going, you know what? I need to do something. I am feeling tired. I'm exhausted. I'm gaining weight. What can I do, doctors? My doctor says that I'm normal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, make that health analysis appointment. That's what's so important. It lets our doctors at Longevity know what's going on with your body, what you're at risk for. Things that we talk about on the show every week. People that are dealing with cancers and dementia, sexual dysfunction, diabetes, Alzheimer's, and so much more. Get in for that free health analysis appointment, and it's simple. Simply call us at 866-86-YOUNG, or you can go to our website, lmclinic.com. LM stands for Longevity Medical. Yeah, we just made it easier for you. lmclinic.com. Pick the day, the time that works the best for you, and one of our clinics in Kirkland, which is newly remodeled and gorgeous, Tacoma, or Linwood. Get online, make that appointment, or you can call right now, and we'll get you plugged in because we want to see you healthier as we approach this new year and be the best you can be because you're aging, and it ain't going away. You want to make it better and make you better for 2024. That number again is 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, lmclinic.com. We'll be back. We're going to talk with John in just a moment, and we have time for one more call at 206-421-5757. We'll be right back.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of cheer.
It's Burl Ives.
Yes, it is.
And you know, he spent his later years in La Conner, in that area.
Did he?
I think that's where he was. And the gate to his estate had all of the characters that he, you know, Rudolph and the snowman and all of that. And, yeah. Yeah, I have not seen it. I've only heard about it. And I thought, so every time I hear his voice, I think of that. We're welcome back. Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Umat here, Dr. Mixon, and we are headed to Vancouver with John on the line. Welcome, John, to the show.
Hello, John.
Thank you for your military and your community service. I do have a couple of things to say about George and Ben. You know, George was close to sainthood. Ben was quite a rascal. That's why we honor him by putting George on the $1 bill and Franklin on the $100 bill.
I agree.
There you go.
I agree.
All right.
Yes. But, you know, he was a very wise rascal.
There you go.
You know,
he was.
He was indeed. But, and I don't know, my heart goes out to the rascals of the world, but maybe because I feel a bit of a kinship to them.
Why is he looking at us?
George Washington was damn close to sainthood. I mean, he punished his troops if they used profanity. Mm. You know, he said, "This is a God-fearing company, and there will be no cursing."
Wow.
Yeah.
It's part of the vocabulary now.
It is.
Maybe that's why Franklin decided not to, you know, he wasn't president. No. A founding father.
He was already old.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's, the founding fathers were a diverse group of complex human beings, you know. You've got Jefferson who hated slavery. Mm. But inherited slaves with his estate. When he inherited, you know, the Jefferson estate over at Montreal, he inherited the slaves with it. Mm. And you could not run that big estate in those days. There were no tractors. Mm-hmm. Slaves were necessary for large-scale farming. And so he inherited the slaves. He used the slaves. He had a slave mistress, you know, for whom it appears he probably had 6 children. And yet, if you go to the Jefferson Memorial, stand in that memorial, read Thomas Jefferson's words about slavery that encircle the inside of his tomb. And he hated slavery. He thought it had to be abolished. He thought it was an abomination to the human race and to the conscience of decent men.
Yes, in the Declaration of Independence, he had one paragraph devoted to outlawing slavery, but they made him take it out.
They made him take it out. That's right. So he was a slave owning abolitionist.
Yeah.
You don't get more.
The Declaration was going to have to be signed by all states, and Georgia and South Carolina wouldn't sign it with that paragraph in there, so he took it out.
That's right. Yes, anyway, because they simply felt there was no way to defeat England unless all 13 colonies participated in the revolution, and 2 of them would not if the prohibition on slavery was in the Declaration. Mm-hmm. So,
yep.
Anyway.
Absolutely. I wish it were taught in school that way.
Yep.
Anyway, the reason I called you was there's a companion to rapamycin. It starts with an A, I can't even pronounce it, much less spell it. But it was Corsican or something after it.
Dasatinib and quercetin, maybe.
Yeah, no, yeah, dasatinib and quercetin, but they're not of rapamycin. We use them, and we use rapamycin, and I use them both. but
okay, what is that first one?
Dasatinib and quercetin.
How do you spell that? I got rapamycin, but I don't have the other.
Okay, dasatinib is D A S A. T I N S A
T I P like Paul?
No, T as in tongue.
T like Tom, okay.
Yeah, T like Tom. I and N I B, dasatinib.
Okay. Okay. And that does about the same thing.
No.
Rapamycin.
No, that's why I use them both. dasatinib, when used with quercetin, is a very potent anti-senescent cell therapy. It kills senescent cells, the so-called zombie cells, the living dead cells in your body that put out chemicals that will prevent you from healing and repairing. And they actually recruit more zombie cells, just like in the movies, zombies make zombies. Well, these senescent cells make more senescent cells out of your healthy cells. So we use the dasatinib quercetin periodically. We take it for 3 days. We give you a four-day break. We do 3 days, another four-day break, and then a 3 days. And so three courses of 3 days over a 9 days of therapy over a three-week period. And that reduces your senescent cell load, we think, about 70%.
Is that quercetin?
That one is an over-the-counter supplement. Yep, we carry it in our website.
Okay.
And then the rapamycin is a 1 day every week, ongoing, long term.
Okay. About 5 milligrams, something like that.
Most of our people are on 4 to 6, that range. Smaller people, 4. Okay. Larger people, 6.
Okay. Thank you very much. You guys have a great Christmas. You do a fantastic job.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Thank you so
Jerry,
much, John.
You were going to say something about dasatinib.
Actually, it was about the rapamycin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've only got about 4 minutes left, so I'll hurry.
Okay.
I kind of gave Samara a heart attack by in the previous show mentioning that occasionally I kick my level up to 16 milligrams instead of my standard 6.
Her eyes got huge.
Yeah. Well, the point is that rapamycin is the only drug we use that we try to dose so that there are no side effects at all. Everything else, we have a benefit we're looking for. And we dose it to the benefit, and then we expect side effects, and we just say, are the side effects worth the benefit? Okay. Rapamycin is one of those things that we're trying to not have any side effects. And I just don't know how realistic that is, because in the animal studies, the higher the dose we give the animals, the longer they live.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
Okay. And so by keeping it very conservative dosing, we may not be getting nearly as much benefit out of it as we could if our doses were higher. Mm. But there's not a lot of experience with higher. People who take it for organ transplantation to keep from rejecting the organs, they're on 1 or 2 milligrams a day. Well, at 2 milligrams a day, that's 14 milligrams a week, not 4.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Okay.
Yes.
And so I normally take 6 because I'm, 200 pounds of me. So would I do better because we give these other people 2 milligrams a day for years at a time, every day? So would I do better at 16? So when I started using it, I started low, and then each week I pushed it up a little higher and a little higher and a little higher. And I actually at one point got up to about 20 milligrams in a week. But at that dose, my sugar was rising and my cholesterol was unacceptably high. So I said, okay, these are side effects I don't want to have. So I dropped it back down to 6, which is a standard dose for my age and my size. But then I went on the metformin. Well, metformin is to lower your blood sugar. So now I'm taking a SERT inhibitor that lowers blood sugar and one that tends to raise blood sugar. So the question in my mind is, can I now start raising the dose of the rapamycin? So whenever I'm scheduled to go get a blood test, I will, that week, I'll take the high dose or a higher dose. Mm. And I'm slowly walking that dose up to see if, when I do my blood test, will it stay in the ranges I want because of the metformin. Mm. So I'm experimenting. Okay. So this is not something I'm recommending for everybody.
No.
I'm kind of feeling my way saying, what troubles am I looking for here? Where are the edges? You know, stick my toes out and find the edge and try not to fall off.
I like it. Wow. Okay. We learned so much on this show. Thank you, Dr. Jerry Mixon, here every week.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Mixon.
Yes. thank you, Dr. Samira Umat, for being on the show. And we will be back live in the studio once again next week as well. Again, if you'd like to get in touch with us, make that HA appointment. It's a health analysis. Here is that number to call, 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website and you'll learn so much there. See what we're doing, what we're up to, and of course, a list of our supplements we talk about as well. That's lmclinic.com. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be back next time.